This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Kusu Chuang. It's Thursday, which means we're approaching the weekend very shortly. Very shortly suggests it's something akin to a couple of minutes, because it's not a couple of minutes. It's still a day and a half.
Hours away, but if you close your eyes long enough, it'll just appear.
More than a day. Yeah, that's true. I'm always excited by the weekend, but to help you deal with the deferred gratification of the weekend, we have an exciting lineup this morning that includes a discussion with Ben LeBron. We're going to go to him in Sydney this morning, as well as a discussion that you're going to be having with Dato' Shamsuddin Bardan, the Executive Director of the Malaysian Employers Federation, and Sivarajan Arumugam, Secretary General of the Party Socialist Malaysia, on the question of that new employment insurance scheme.
Yeah, so obviously with Ben LeBron, we're going to be talking about the Federal Reserve's rate tightening curve. In the face of weak U.S. data, which has actually been quite moribund the last few fortnight, and I think with employee insurance scheme in Malaysia, we've got that panel, as you say, Sharad. Quite interesting individuals. Both will be expected to be highly vocal. One, obviously, with the Employees Federation, and the other one with the Socialist Party of Malaysia. The issue is really worker compensation in terms of occasions of retrenchment. And that's very important because, you know, the economies are quite weak now. And with the advent of AI and automation, a lot of people will be attritioned out of their jobs because machines will take their place. And you've got to find some kind of social safety net, because if you don't, a lot of, you know, thousands of workers on the streets with empty stomachs and empty families will not a pretty sight make.
Yeah, and that's something. So there's a social dimension to this
absolutely,
which has necessitated some sort of strategy, and this is one of the strategies being proposed. Now, we also have today, we're going to be looking at all kinds of things, including Facebook, because Facebook is growing into, seems like, another planet. It's reaching almost 2 billion users,
which is quite uncanny.
Which is about a quarter of the planet, isn't it? Something of that order?
Yeah, I think the global population is about 6.5-7 billion people. So 1 in 3 people in the world has a Facebook account. That's quite scary. I saw this thing on Mark Zuckerberg a few weeks ago about how he's got this roadmap and vision for the way ahead. It's quite interesting because he wants to get rid of smartphones, and it's all about control of your thoughts. It's very it's a bit scary, but it's very exciting at the same time.
Oh, like augmented reality or a chip in your brain?
Yeah, because they want to be the interface between what you think and what happens out as a result.
These visionaries, hurtling us towards some sort of dystopic or utopian vision. Well, I mean,
what is the difference between dystopic and utopic?
Well, the dystopic is the dark side of it. It's the apparent beauty and progress, but underscored by something dark and brooding. And so it's always, you know, you think of Brave New World. We talked about Brave New World yesterday. Yeah. Also, the older theme of nation building in Malaysia continues. After the 8:30 news, we look at vernacular schools. We look at, in particular, Tamil schools, Sekolah Jenis Kebangsaan Tamil, and what role they might play in reaching nation or achieving some sense of a common cause that Malaysians might have. It's now being tagged as TN50. We had Wawasan Doplo Doplo. Now it's TN50. Whatever the government slogan for it is, the underlying issue really is that a sense of common destiny, I guess. Also, today on Ringgit and Sense, we have Iris Lee of iMoney, and we look at millennials and their financial woes. Coming up, we're going to have Band on the Run by Paul McCartney, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues. I'm Sharad Kutin with Kusu Chuang, and that was Wings and Band on the Run, because Wings was a band that was formed by Paul McCartney.
It was,
if you didn't know.
His very successful career with the Beatles.
And then he just went solo, and then he was just Paul McCartney.
And then he married Yoko Ono, and then that was it.
No, John Lennon married...
Sorry, I beg your pardon. I'm all over the shop this morning.
But he did have a kind of engagement with Michael Jackson, and when he did, you know, Ebony and Ivory and all those duets.
Of the lyrical variety, not anything else.
I wouldn't be able to speak to the relationship that people have, but they made sweet music together.
Ebony and Ivory was one of their best tracks.
Okay, speaking of sweet music, branding is so essential to companies, to organizations, to social causes, and the Pakatan Harapan no less than that. But what they've done recently is they put out the logos for choice. They're looking to their supporters, perhaps the general public, to tell them which logo will go best or go down best as a way of representing their aspirations. It's now become the subject of much satire and nothing less than fake Malaysian news, that satirical, that very good satirical
website.
It's
actually very good,
it's
I must
very
admit.
Good, yeah. Right? They're taking it up because one of the options is what looks like a buffering sign. So it's like Pakatan Harapan buffering. It hasn't got its act together yet, still buffering. And so the question is, will something like that, a logo that allows you to kind of poke fun at the brand, something that you want to avoid assiduously, because, you know, it's not great when people remember you. I mean, it's great that people remember you, but do you want them to remember you with a chuckle?
For the wrong reasons, yeah.
Yeah, so what do you think of the options? If you looked at that story, buffering Harapan logo symbolizes long wait for coalition to get its, I'm going to replace a word there, act together. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think?
You know, I think a lot of companies, they spend huge amounts of money with advertising companies to produce a logo, and sometimes it costs a lot, you know, in the millions, but they don't get the perspective that they want, and it comes all wrong. And there's been a long history is littered with examples of, you know, brands and logos gone wrong, and most of them, you know, with obscene connotation. I'm not going to go to them a lot here, but at least, you know, buffering's kind of like the more harmless end of the spectrum.
That's right, because they're also the problem of cultural nuances, right? So
yeah.
You create it in, say, Malaysia, it doesn't quite travel
yeah.
to another
yeah.
country, right? Because there are all kinds of words that, you know, might sound like something in the local language that is not appealing or offensive or very funny. And so
yeah.
the question is, you know, is your brand, can any brand today be completely local? What do you think?
It's very tough because so many languages, so many cultures. I mean, car companies have this problem all the time. They name a car a certain model, you know, in say the US, and then in Asia, it's known, you know, if it's given the same name, it might have different because, you know, the language and the translation, you get, it gets
and also,
very
yeah,
much
yeah,
lost.
You know,
in the,
I think
know,
of that. I think of that car called Leisho.
Yeah,
which you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah, Nissan Leisho, right?
Yeah,
you just add one more syllable and then off you go.
And off it's, you go. That's absolutely right. But the question is, what do they do? And should they have put it to a kind of public referendum? Well, should they have, you know, instead of sort of doing maybe closed door focus groups and an internal discussion with, you know, media types, they now opened it up to the public. It seems very democratic, but was that the wrong move?
What, the Harapan?
Yeah, by putting out their logo and saying, hey, you know, we have
what
these
do you
three,
reckon?
What do you reckon? Do you think it was a bad move?
You know, I've got this, you know, because I like polls. I like them for what they stand for. But sometimes you get too much information, too many various feedback, and you know, it kind of like confuses you even more.
Right. So you think it's a bad idea?
In general.
So
yeah.
What do you,
specific
what would you...
situations, like if you want to leave a union, for example, then you at least you ask the whole population because they're all unified in the same direction. You know, it's kind of like a national thing.
But, you know, the other side of it, Chuang, is that once you put it out in the open, you actually get the crowd
invested in the discussion.
That's invested in the discussion, one, but also they might alert you to things that nobody would have thought of. So you actually get it's a test run, as it were. And so now they know, this is a bad sign. So it might look pretty because actually aesthetically there's nothing wrong with it.
It looks like like a sun rising or something, but the problem is because all of us live on the internet nowadays, it looks exactly like that.
They're like the buffering sign.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it
yeah.
opened itself up. But again, was it
but
a
you
wise...
See, yeah, the interpretation is so apt because it's true. The opposition have got they've yet to get their act
together.
And this kind of like just plays it. So, they, you know, it's like a double whammy, right? You know, it's like rubbing salt in the wound kind of thing.
Okay. And so we're going to be back after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues. I'm Shah Kutin, with me, Kusu Chuang. And that was Aretha Franklin. All of 75 this year.
75 years old, can you imagine?
Yeah, that was a song, Good Times. She's had some really good times and great songs. And
respect among
what,
them. She did a collaboration with George Michael one year, I think in the 80s or something.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
She's sung with some greats. She herself, because is a great herself. And every time I hear that voice, I feel, you know, my blood rushes around a little faster.
Warms the cockles of one's heart.
Yeah, it puts a little step in my walk. Now, something that might get you down, apparently WhatsApp is down globally. There's a global outage.
Yeah.
And I know because I was trying to order breakfast this morning and asking colleagues if they would pick something up for me and it didn't go through. I thought it was the internet, but it wasn't the internet. In fact, WhatsApp is down. Do we know anything about why WhatsApp is down?
So far, we don't know yet. But what we do know is that Facebook bought it, I think 3 years ago, $19 billion in stock. And I think there was some cash in there. But there's more people on WhatsApp now than there is on Snapchat. I think I think there's over a billion users on WhatsApp. I think Snapchat's only got about 350 or million.
So the question is, if you use WhatsApp to conduct all your daily life,
hugely dependent on it.
What happens with a global outage of this sort? I mean, how do you find a way around WhatsApp? Say it goes down for a couple of hours, that might not be a problem. But if it goes down for more than that, what's going to happen?
We revert to the telephone lines.
SMS. Do you remember for SMS?
We are forced to speak to people face-to-face. That'll be a new thing.
But you know, a lot of us aren't that close. So that we deal with a lot of people who are not within a physical reach. So then what do you do with that situation?
We're back on the POTN. You know what the POTN is?
No,
what is it? The POTN, the Plain Old Telephone Network.
Oh, the POTN. Sounds like Kutun.
Fixed line.
Kutun, back on the POTN. Okay. We are also looking at a story from the news. Sarawak's Batu Lintang Adun, or State Assemblyman Si Chi Hao, is pushing for a law that will allow the state government to hold referendums. And this has got to do with what he thinks is going to push Sarawak in terms of a governance issue. So in terms of governance, this is going to be a great thing for Sarawak. So he says he wants to distinguish it from a move that was made 2 years ago by the group Sarawak for Sarawakians, which also pushed for a referendum, or the power to hold referendum. And they gathered over 200,000 signatures in support of that move. It didn't go anywhere. This time around, he's saying it's got nothing to do with calling for independence for Sarawak. It's got to do with governance issues. What do you think? Would you want the state governor of Selangor, for instance, Chuang, to constantly go to you for decisions they ought to make on public matters?
Well, I find it slightly baffling that Sarawak is not allowed to hold their own referendums. What happens?
Well, you need enabling legislation. It's like the local elections as well.
Yeah, but why does Sarawak have that?
Well, no, I don't think any state in the federation.
Shouldn't you be allowed to have your own say? Some people say that too many times you ask people too many times, there's a lot of fatigue and lethargy that enters the equation. Well, I think it's fantastic. You can choose to abstain or you can choose to say yay or nay. It's up to you, isn't it? At least you've got the choice.
Yeah, but I think the other issue is that once the government embarks on this route in terms of opening up decision-making...
The floodgates doth open. I mean, that's the argument, right?
Well, yeah, what Si Chi Hao is saying is that it's not going to be binding on the government. He doesn't want legislation that makes it binding on the government. What he wants is legislation that will allow the reference so there is at least some sense of public sentiment that goes into policy-making.
It's a barometer. It's a temperature gauge at the end of the day.
Now, if you
Even our cars have got temperature gauges. Why shouldn't other people?
That's such a stunning analogy. It's almost stopped me dead in my tracks. If you have an opinion right? about referendum, you think that, say, for instance, Selangor should have a power to call referendum, then you can tweet us at BFM Radio or text us or WhatsApp us. No, you can't WhatsApp us because it's downbound globally.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can text us 016-201-9000, 016-201-9000. So remember, just tell us what you think about that proposal.
Yeah.
Now, the thing, of course, is that is there something about Sarawak that is different from the other components of the federation
I think that's the
right
issue, because if you got one state that goes in one direction and then 12 other states want to follow suit. I guess the positive side of this is that however the people, referendum or vote, for it, as it were, then you can, like, for example, with Brexit, yeah, in the UK, people chose to leave the union. I think 52 or 53% of the referending population voted accordingly. Then the government can say, well, you voted for it. It's your call, right?
Yeah. So, okay, we have words like referendum. We have things like plebiscite. That's a word we don't use very often in discussions
Can
about
you
Malaysia.
Can you explain the word plebiscite?
Well, plebiscite is just a direct vote of all members of an electorate on an important public question.
Yeah, that's a referendum.
Yeah, so it's basically a referendum. But it's got a slightly,
more formal tinge to it?
Well, it's got Roman provenance. It's got to do with the fact that, you know, the word plebeian.
Julius, yeah.
The word plebeian.
The plebs, as well.
Yeah, the hoi polloi, the masses.
The commoners.
That's right. And you said that with a French accent because it's necessary to have
supposed
that.
To be German, actually.
No, it's Roman.
The commoners.
But it's actually Roman. That's it, Roman. It's Italiano.
It's Italian. Okay, Julius, that was work of Julius.
So plebeians, or plebeians, whatever. How do you say it? Do you say plebeian?
The plebs. You say the plebs. That's what you do. You say the plebs. The unwashed masses.
The unwashed masses. So you think it's a great idea.
I think it's a fantastic idea, regardless of the question of fatigue,
political fatigue or voter fatigue, you think
you can choose to abstain, ma. You can say, I'm too lazy tonight. I've got to go home and have dinner with my wife.
Okay, on the question of abstaining from voting.
Yeah.
Singapore has a rule that fines you for not participating in the general
election. Well, that's Singapore, isn't it? They love to fine people. That's why they've got so much cash in their balance sheet.
Oh, come on.
They do.
Don't be simplistic about it. Now tell me, do you think governments should incentivize participation in political processes?
Governments incentivize plebiscite voting because they want to, you know, I guess they can engineer the result. All kinds of innuendos coming out. But no, you shouldn't. It's up to you, right? Because if you're going to go for dinner with your wife and you can't go to the polling station, then it's your call, isn't it? You
know what I mean? Well, next up, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Soul to Squeeze on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, we're back on The Morning Run, The Way You Do the Things You Do by UB40. I'm Sharad Kutin. And Kusu Chuang is with me too, who's now, I think, got a massive influx of WhatsApp messages because we reported just a few minutes ago.
It was down.
It was reported globally. It's now come back online, much to the relief of many and maybe a hint of regret because there was some relief, I think, when your WhatsApp's not working. You don't have that constant ding.
Don't have to work, basically, because it's become such a productivity tool. I mean, for many people, especially for us. But for large swaths of the world, it's also a social tool, isn't it? So if you can't talk to your mates, then it's the end of the world.
I mean, how many WhatsApp groups do you have?
About a million and a half.
A million and a half. I have slightly more than that, maybe a million and a half and one. Okay. This was in the newspapers yesterday. Malaysian scientist in UK proves existence of supermassive black hole. Supermassive black hole is actually a term. But it was the headline that got some people slightly annoyed because it seemed to suggest that this Malaysian scientist was the sole person involved in this endeavor. And it's kind of created some little discussion on Twitter.
It should be the collective noun, isn't it, as opposed to one person.
Yeah. So a Malaysian scientist was, in fact, involved, and we should celebrate that fact that Malaysians are not only getting into science, they're doing well and they're excelling in different parts of the world. But perhaps that slight overstatement, you know, a bit of a rah-rah Malaysia moment in that headline. But then when you read the story, you learn that Noor Adhika Anul Anua, she's 27. She's a PhD student with the Extragalactic Astronomy Centre. You think this is from and Physics Department at Durham University in the United Kingdom. So it's a reputable university. She's part of a team that was looking into the question of the existence of supermassive black holes. Now, she presented the team's research findings at the American Astronomical Society's 229th meeting recently.
The title of the paper, Sharad, was called Black Holes, Green Galaxies, Old Stars and New Star. Love it.
Love it. Okay.
Love it. I never knew scientists were wordsmiths as well.
You have to be these days. She is the second of four kids from Muar Johor, my state. And she says, she's reported saying that she became interested in astronomy and astrophysics
at age 13.
After watching Armageddon and Apollo 13.
What do you mean? It's
amazing.
It's quite cool, isn't it?
It is very cool. What we did, though, just because I think a lot of us don't understand what the supermassive black hole is, what its significance is.
And what it means, because, I have no idea what it means.
Well, you know what? We spoke to somebody, Fabian Buhi, who is the co-founder of the online science platform PublicSci. We asked him exactly what this supermassive black hole is.
So basically, the sun is running on some sort of tube, right? And in 6 billion years, it's going to run out of tube. So what's going to happen is the gravity of the sun is going to push inwards, right, and create that little ball of fire. It's going to shrink. It's going to shrink so much that it's going to explode and create what we call a supernova. And when that supernova spread across the solar system, the leftover will be what we call a black hole. So the black hole is basically really, really, really powerful mass that attracts everything around it. Nothing can escape a black hole, including light. So that's a black hole, right? Now, a supermassive black hole is a million times bigger than a sun, which is crazy, right? So let's say that you are in a bathtub and you fill it up with water, right? As soon as you take the plug out, the water is going to rush through that pipe, right? And it's going to rotate like this. It's going to have that spiral kind of move, and it's going to get into the tube, right? It's exactly the same concept, right? The black hole is at the center of our galaxy. That supermassive black hole is at the center of our galaxy, and it basically, everything, including our solar system, our sun, and ourselves, are actually currently rotating around that supermassive black hole. So we're rotating around the sun, right? The sun is rotating around the galaxy, and the galaxy is rotating around that supermassive black hole.
So we asked Fabian to explain its significance for us ordinary people, the man in the street. I mean, this stuff is happening way, way out there, as it were. And also,
not years away, actually.
Yeah, and
that's a long way away.
It's all, and you know, but because we're talking about the scale of things, it changes when you talk about, you know, astrophysics and astronomy. So that's something that's very hard to get our head around. So we did ask Fabian the significance of this particular discovery.
So the problem is that we believe that the supermassive black holes were birthed when the universe was created during the Big Bang, right? But the point of a black hole is we can't actually see them. We can't take pictures of them because nothing can actually reflect from it because light can't escape. And the mass is there. So we know it exists, but we can actually never discover it, which is what is amazing about that discovery. It's like they actually found the proof for it.
That was Fabian Buhi, the co-founder of the online science platform PublishSci, talking about the supermassive black hole, an endeavor that has drawn in one Malaysian talent, a young woman whose name is Noor Adhika Anul Anwar. She's 27. She's at Durham University. Congratulations to her.
Congratulations to her. Kudos. But you know what? Nothing diminishes the minutiae of all the small things that we bicker about on a daily basis, whether it's race or religion. Nothing diminishes those issues than the realization that we are mere atoms in this massive galaxy, universe, whatever you have it.
And you know what? Isn't that insignificant?
You know what I mean?
Liberating?
It does, right? It just kind of like just makes you understand this is all just a storm in a teacup.
Yeah. And you know, you don't even have to go that far. Just look at geological time when the continents
absolutely
were shaped. And you know, and you look at the long durée, long histories.
Yes,
it
absolutely
also puts everything in perspective.
Into perspective.
Our daily struggles. Yeah. We'll be back with more BFM 89.9. We're back on the morning run. Kusu Chuang, Tan Chung Han, and myself, Sharad Kutin, and we have a quick roundup of the stories in the business news that we're going to be discussing this morning. Han, we have the stunning fact that the number of people on Facebook is reaching continental levels. It's almost 2 billion people on Facebook.
That's right. And they just released their quarterly earnings as well. And sales climbed 49% to over $8 billion U.S. dollars. Net income rose to over $3 billion U.S. dollars. So you've got that tremendous growth story there for Facebook. However, Facebook officials, you know, did take some time to try and temper market expectations, saying that, you know, hey, perhaps these kind of quarterly results may not be replicated moving forward.
Okay, so you can have something like Facebook with a lot of people on it, but it doesn't necessarily translate into revenue, right? So there's a separate story, it's a separate part of the narrative. Yes, they've gotten a lot of people, but is the revenue increasing? Is it decreasing? Is it growing? And where is it growing?
Well it is growing, and mobile ads are certainly making up a lion's part of the share. So you've got basically Google and Facebook dominating the online mobile ad space, right? So obviously with these numbers here, Facebook is still certainly printing the moolah, so to speak. But then again, it's moving forward. Whether the kind of growth trajectory, that momentum can be maintained, I think that's that's something else to be looked at.
What about Banda Malaysia? It's trending on Twitter. That's a big business story, and also one that's linked to 1MDB.
Yeah, so that's a big, big one. All right, so you've got the Banda Malaysia stake sale that was announced on the last day of 2015, December 31st, 2015. That now has apparently been aborted. All right. So you got TRX City on one side. You know, TRX City used to be called as 1MDB Real Estate. On the other side, you've got Iskandar Waterfront Holdings and also CREC, the Chinese company that had a company that bought that 60% equity sale for to the tune of some 7.4 billion ringgit. Right now. No more. All right. So then you've got TRX City basically blaming or saying that the deal is called off because, you know, despite numerous delays, IWH, CREC, Sdn Bhd did not make those payments as, you know, stipulated in the SSA, the sales agreement. What else? On the other hand, you got IWH. They also released a statement. They responded. And it almost came as a surprise, saying that they're taking this very seriously. And they're going to dig deeper into this.
Well, there's a couple of things at stake here, Han, isn't it? Because I guess most germanely, it's whether the whole issue of 1MDB's debt rationalization plan, you know, whether the wheels have come off. I think secondly as well, it's really the Chinese involvement in Malaysia. And whether that kind of, you know, those taps have been turned off, or whether those taps are being threatened or being turned off because of slower growth back home.
Yeah, you know, indeed, that's a very, very valid question because, you know, when this deal was announced at the end of 2015, there were many criticisms, right? You know, that, oh, no, here we are again, Malaysia selling key assets to, you know, Chinese or to Chinese entities, right? So at least the silver lining to this deal being scrapped is that now the Ministry of Finance here in Malaysia will still resume all 100% of Bandar Malaysia, and they'll go about, you know, developing it on their own. Keep in mind, Bandar Malaysia is a choice piece of land. It's also going to be the location of one of the high-speed rail terminals from KL to Singapore. So there's plenty of potential there. But yes, Chong, you're right. You know, now the question is, what does this do for 1MDB's debt rationalization plan? Because it's not just this deal, right? If you recall that other deal between 1MDB and IPIC, right, that was threatened as well. Granted, there are good faith discussions being, you know, conducted between both sides of the equation now. You know, 1MDB is to pay $1.2 billion US to IPIC. So even that being another pillar in 1MDB's debt rationalization plan, that is under threat as well.
I mean, when you talked about that piece of land being, you know, kind of valuable, and you mentioned the high-speed rail bids are only coming in at the end of this year. So we're looking at a really long time frame for, I mean, not geological time, but we're looking at still a couple of years before that even is seen. And I think the value of that parcel of land is now being based on the cost or the value of land that's adjacent to it, right? Rather than what it necessarily will realize, because it's all dependent on how the economy develops in the next couple of years.
Well, it's not a couple of years, though. Try 30 years, right? So that's the expected timeline in order to fully develop Bandar Malaysia. So this is a long-term thing. So it's, you know, there are question marks being posed about, you know, 1MDB's debt rationalization, question marks about Bandar Malaysia. Also, question marks being posed about Iskandar Waterfront City, you know.
Whose shares have tripled in the last year, since the start of the year. So
tripled, did you say?
Yes, tripled. More than tripled, actually. So a lot of people
Yeah, 280% or so, yeah.
So we'll be looking with great interest as to how that share price is going to move at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, most definitely.
Very quickly, Malaysian Airlines is also in the news coming up later this morning. Now we have The Who with My Generation, and after that, the news at 7 o'clock.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.